and welcome to Laying Time Chat, episode 58. How are you, David?
I am doing well, and we have a little guest with us.
Yeah, so I think, God, is it okay that it's hitting the red bar every time? Maybe I turned it up too loud.
Oh, it's fine.
I'm really sorry if we're blowing your eardrums out. Also sorry if in the background you hear a constant motorboat. I'm not sorry for the cause of it, because that is Kitty over here purring up a storm. But our microphone doesn't distinguish between background noises and front ground voice noises, which means it may just be amplifying everything, including this incredible purring. And she is one happy cat. All right. This episode is titled Conlang Relay Demo, because we're going to be doing a little demonstration in this episode. And so for some of you who have not yet participated in a Conlang Relay, I know you've heard of them. We've done an episode on them before. We've talked about them. Recently, there was George Corley's YouTube relay with all the results. And so chances are you've at least seen what it is and the results, and seeing like how the text goes from one person to the next. But you might still be asking yourself, but what is it really like to receive a Conlang Relay Torch? What is it that you get? How does that feel? What kind of processes might you go through or think through? We all have our own processes, but still sometimes it helps to like just hear a person think through. And so that is what we're doing today in this episode, is we're doing a little demo of what it's like to receive a torch and then have to translate it from a conlang that you don't know into English. And then from that English translation, based on your understanding of what the text says, into a conlang of your own. And that is our goal for the day. Now, mind you, you would normally have something like 48 hours. So most of the relays that I've been involved in, it's the expectation in general is 48 hours. Sometimes you need a little longer, but usually that's the expectation. You get your text, you've got 48 hours to work with it and get your text on to the next participant. But because this is a mini demo, David's going to have less than an hour. He gave me a big smile on that.
I'm good.
Now, mind you, I have this in mind, so I don't have a paragraph for him to work with. It is incredibly small what he's going to be working with. So he really will have less than an hour. And quite frankly, we may end up having a lot of time to discuss things.
Good.
Outside of it. So I have prepared a translation and relay text for David. And as a little added bonus, as patrons, you're privy to some information that right now only David knows. And that is, I am making my first daughter language of a large language family from one of my conlangs. And this is, not only is this text in the language, but I'm using this language for Luxembourg. And so this is a little preview of the language. And so David, while he has seen the mother language, has not really been exposed to this daughter language at all. And so this will be new. It's not like Zhuari, which he has heard extensively about. He has not heard very much about this. And so little mini preview for all you patrons out there. So David's going to be getting the text right now during this episode, and he's going to translate it from my language into English, and then from English into whatever conlang he feels speaks to him of his. And so really, it's just the limit is what you feel like working with in this hour.
Mm-hmm.
The text that I'm giving him is in Vuochinad.
Any guesses about what the mother language is?
That's a wonderful question to pose. It's really hard to get answers from a podcast.
Yeah, I don't hear them saying anything.
They're very quiet.
Are they even listening?
I don't know that they are. They're
terrible.
You need to sneeze and get their attention.
Don't invite it.
I have warned David he's not allowed to sneeze because our microphone does seem to be like on high alert. So he's not allowed to sneeze. But okay, so Vuochinad is a daughter language of Vuochtinato, which is a language that I created in 2019. All right, so To get started, I have not, now that I'm looking at the next slide, I realize the next slide is the text, and I did not practice reading this out loud.
Oh, this will be fun.
One little bit. Yikes. Okay, so you all are going to get to be part of this journey with me. David, you are welcome to now open the document that I have allowed you. I think what I'm going to do, we should have really figured this out beforehand. You all are really in on an experimental level of doing this sort of demo live. But what I think we should probably do, unless we are seeing problems, is as David instructs me what he's going to be looking at in the text, I will make sure we're on the right slide and we'll read through the information so that way listeners have the information and then David can make sure that he goes through his thought process out loud as he works.
But first, let's just enjoy the text. If I have any advice for you, just pronounce it like Wachtianato, but just add sound changes.
Thank you, David.
You're welcome.
Gosh. I've never wanted to slap you with a fish so much.
I mean,
except in this moment.
It's the same advice I give you for French. Just pronounce it like Latin and throw in the sound changes. You're all good.
Goodness gracious. David is full of wise advice. Oh my goodness. All right. Well, here we go. The relay text is Gehag and Owl. No. Just kidding. That would have been some sound change though. Okay, now I've made myself laugh so hard that I'm having a hard time getting back to it, and I do apologize. Gahagin Aleriatonia Tawagnitum Gyejim Wod Ijim Yabeji Klig Sarianya Jeja.
What does the grav accent?
That's the schwa.
Oh.
Because I didn't want to use an actual schwa. And so here it just means it's a schwa sound. There were some vowel reductions where, and in some cases the schwa is retained, other cases it ends up being deleted. But anyway, yeah. So the schwa was introduced into this vowel system.
And you spelled it like that, huh?
I did. What, are you going to judge me?
Huh?
The schwa to me is closest to an E. In terms of shape.
Okay.
And so it makes it easy for my brain to remember.
Mm.
I know you would probably do it on the A instead of the E.
I would have written it with a schwa or gone and asked myself, does this really need to be distinguished in the romanization?
It does, because it will make a difference on words.
All right. Fair enough.
And, okay. In their writing system, they would distinguish it as a sound because it is legitimately a different sound for the system. So now that David has judged me already, mm-hmm. and he wonders why I sometimes am like always questioning work I do as he judges me.
But why would I matter?
Look at it and enjoy. Not even a congratulations for reading that and getting through it and, you did and a really, semi doing okay.
You did a really good job, especially after you cleared the runway, so to speak. Anyway.
All right. So outside of the schwa, which he doesn't like, are you ready?
Yes. So tell me when to begin.
You can start talking through what you're thinking right now, and then I'm just going to make sure that we actually read aloud information that people need to hear.
Okay, so first thing, I get the text here. I open it up. First thing I do is look at the text to see the length. I see the length, and I see, oh, good, not too bad. So next is going to come a section called grammar notes.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to skip that. Yeah, we're going to skip that entirely. Instead, what we're going to do is we're going to go straight to the glossary.
I'm there. Okay.
All right. So first thing that we do is we're going to start looking at words and matching things up. So we've got this first word, gehagen. Go down here and I see something that's gaham and it looks like a verb. So I'm going to say that there's probably something going on. First thing is a verb. Word order is probably VSO. And so I'm going to go ahead and write... bloom slash grow underneath that and go back down. Next word we're looking for is Aliyetonya. All right. I don't see anything that matches straight up with that. And so what that means is there's probably some sort of agglutination going on here. I do see rie, though. That's trees. We have a C3 here, so there's probably some sort of noun class thing. I could get all this from the grammar, but I generally like to just throw things down first. However, we are running into a problem here, because this word is ala rie tonya. I see rie. I don't see anything for tonya. I don't see anything for ala. And so there is some grammar happening there, and I'm not getting it from just the thing. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to put in scare quotes, I'm going to put trees here, and that's it. Next we have tawagnitum. Tawagni is wildflowers, so that's cool. And I'm going to guess that tom is some sort of bit of grammar. So then we're going to go on. We have giejem. Gie is yellow. Nothing for gem. And so we're going to say that is yellow there and going to assume for the time being it's a modifier. Next we have woth. So we have woth, and this is a conjunction and. Final consonant occurs before words beginning with a vowel. That is cool. I like that. So that's and. We see the gem again, by the way. E, small. All right, so this is probably some sort of agreement thing happening here. I don't know exactly what, because Tawakni is glossed as wild flowers, not wild flower. I would have guessed plural, but I don't think that's the case. All right, moving on, we have Yabeji. We have Yabeji, Yabej. Conjunction when, during, at the time of. Okay, and again, there's some phonology there. So I'm going to put when, while, Klieg. Klieg. Probably again, I notice you have Gahagen, right? But the glossary entry is Gaham with an M. Then you have Klieg, but the glossary entry is Kleem. So I bet that M is something having to do with a verb. And it means to exist, to happen, or to fall, or to blow. So I'm going to put exist, fall, something like that. Sarianya. Sari is snow or snowflakes, snow that is falling. I'm just going to write snow there. And Zheja. Zhe is white. All right. There we go. And we're going to stop there for a moment. So how much time has elapsed?
I think it's been like 4 minutes.
All right.
It has not been very long at all. I'm going to fly back into the presentation, back to slide 7 with the text. Okay. So you can now see the text. I had the glossary on the screen, so that way you could kind of see what David was reading as he went line by line, word by word, rather, through the text. Because I will say the relay text itself fit onto a single line on the document. So it's not even line by line. It was literally line. And so what I would like to do, though, is just make sure that even if you don't end up reading, because you did end up figuring some things out, obviously. But even if you don't read all of the things on the page for yourself, I do want to make sure the audience hears them so they know what it is that you had received should you have needed it.
Oh, yeah. No, we'll go back to that.
Okay.
I wanted to explain what I did and why. First of all, I know that this relay text has come from Jesse, and I know that Jesse is good. And so I would, you know, knowing that, I would go through her grammar notes, and I'm sure that they would be accurate and helpful. Oftentimes when you're in a relay, you don't necessarily know the work of the person that's coming from you. So what I like to try to do is I want to try to figure out what the thing is supposed to be saying without having to look at the grammar. Because sometimes if you go into the grammar, someone will be writing something that they think is true, but is not true. or they won't give you enough information, or they'll give you misleading information. That can also happen with the glossary. There's two different schools of thought to it when it comes to a relay. One is, I'm going to give you everything that you need and nothing else. And the other is, I'm going to give you everything and you figure it out. And then also there's the kind of in between that is, I want to show you how clever I am. And so even though this isn't relevant, I'm going to include it. And so what I would generally do, though, is I would go to that glossary, try to plunk down as many words as I can, see what they end up being, and see if I can figure out what the sentence is saying. So my guess right now is I don't exactly know. The trees are blooming with small and yellow wildflowers while the white snow is falling. That's my guess, but I know that there's more to it because I couldn't figure out what was going on with trees. The thing that I have just glossed is trees. And I know for a fact that more is going on with the verbs than I can figure out from just the glossary. I also know that there's some agreement stuff happening. I'm guessing that that is going to be less important to figure out than figuring out the verbs and figuring out what's going on with this second word, alarietonia. So now I'm going to go back into the grammar notes and then figure things out. But the nice thing is that you're not going into this grammar cold. Essentially, if you look at the relay text and just look at it and kind of read it to yourself and then go to the grammar notes, you're going in cold. Mm-hmm. Here, you've put down some words and you're making some assumptions. Some assumptions may be wrong, and that's fine, but at least you're starting with something. Now the grammar, as you go through it, it's going to have some context. Nice. So it's like the first thing that we figured out right away, it's like, okay, this is probably a verb initial language, and indeed it is. So we're looking at the grammar notes now, and Jesse started off with the really basic typology stuff. So we're looking at a language that's VSO, prepositional, and modifiers follow the nouns, a strongly head initial language.
Indeed. And I will say that, as David had mentioned, there are different categories of people in terms of what documentation they send with a relay text. And I am of the first variety that he described, where I will send you what you need to get through the text and not much else. If something else is included, it honestly is accidental, because my goal is to give you what you need to get through the text, because the goal is for you to figure out basically what you think the text is saying. And a lot of times, especially when you have more than a sentence, it's going to be challenging enough on its own without having eight different, you know, verb conjugation charts to get through to figure out this one form that you actually needed for the text. And so these grammar notes, like, these were the only typological, the really basic clause facts that I gave David. Does that mean that's all that there are in the language? Well, no, there's of course more. Like, and if he had more text, I may have needed to include more, you know, with it, but I'm only going to give what is necessary for the text.
So when you're making maki, Japanese maki, right? And you learn how to do this, you know, you put the stuff in, you roll it up, and you wet the seaweed so that it's sealed, and you've essentially got a tube, right? And then you have to cut it. A lot of times, those who are unfamiliar, they'll think about things in their own life that are similar. So when they go to cut it, they think of it like cutting a sausage or cutting a loaf of French bread or something like that. And if you go at it with this attitude, you're going to end up tearing the seaweed and with these really uneven, chunky cuts of maki. And the way that it was explained to me by my grandmother, my stepdad's mother, is first you have to have a very sharp knife. You know, a nice sharp knife is good. You wet the knife, be sure the knife is wet. But then you don't like push into it, right? You don't push into it to cut it the way you do bread. Instead, you make a very, very, very small slit in the top of the nori, the seaweed, And then you let the weight of the knife do the work. You don't have to press it. You just go back and forth. And that's how you get, you go nice and slow, and that's how you get the nice, even cut, right? So you essentially just let the tool do the work. When it comes to a relay, I think there are some people, and it's not just relay masters, but sometimes people who are performing the relay who are thinking, this thing isn't going to be fun if I don't put some work into it to like make sure that the text gets messed up. Or like, you know, like if you just put the bare minimum in there, they'll think it's going to be too easy. They're going to get my text. They're going to translate it exactly. And it's going to be super easy. They're going to pass it on within like a couple of hours and nothing will have changed. And then everybody will look at my text and be like, your text was too easy. It didn't make anything fun. It wasn't interesting enough. It's like, no. The relay itself, that's the weight of the knife. Just doing the very basic elements of it, that's going to have the text change enough. You, as easy as you think your language is, that's because you're familiar with it. Mm-hmm. You have no idea what it's going to be like when somebody else takes a look at it. And vice and opposite way as well. Sometimes something you think may be very, very tricky is not going to be tricky for that person, but something else will be. Something that you think is simple, like, what do you mean? I just translated that word for you. How did you get so screwed up with it? And it's like, I didn't know that's what you meant by that, you know? Mm. Anyway, so in terms of how much, you know, stuff to include for the relay. Okay, so that was the basic stuff. Mm-hmm. Jesse has jumped to the verbs next, which is probably a good thing since we're VSO. Wachanad verbs co-occur with suffixes that indicate tense and subject agreement, including, here we go. So we have a third person singular past tense, third person plural past tense, and the singular is more complex than the plural. We have gen versus g. Verbs mm-hmm. are listed in the dictionary in their infinitive form, which occurs with the suffix m. Okay, so that's
which
where
you
that,
had figured out, yeah.
Yeah, so that's where the m suffix is coming up. And we don't see it in the text. Everything is, what's the word for when it's actually conjugated?
Finite,
thank yeah. you, in the text. All right. But we do see gen right for the mm-hmm. beginning right there. And then we see klieg, right? Mm-hmm. Now, if we go down, we had gaham, right? Gahagen, right? And so that's third person singular past tense. All right. And then we have kleem and klieg. And so there we go. Now we've got our verbs figured out. So this is past tense. So that's something important to know. I'm going to guess it's bloomed and not grew, thinking about trees and stuff like that. So we've got bloomed there. And this one, I really think this is fell, and it's plural. It doesn't really matter, because if we're dealing with snow, it's just it's a mass concept in English anyway. But you can see how a language might treat that as plural. So we're going to stick with that for the time being.
Okay. Oh. Ready to go on to nouns?
Yeah.
Okay, there we go.
Unmarked Vachanad nouns are indefinite plural forms. Okay, this is obviously where things were getting screwed up in my head, because all these things were translated as plural. Because, like, this is another question when it comes to writing up a dictionary. If there's a word in the text that only ever occurs in plural, do you put it in your dictionary as plural, or do you put it as singular? All these things were occurring as plural, but evidently that was because that's the basic form. So, good to know. Mm-hmm. Suffixes like the following mark: singularity, definiteness, including demonstrative definiteness, and noun class. Okay, so we've got two different classes shown here, class 1 and 3. They're not defined beyond that, so we'll just leave it at that. Tom and Tonya are singular, medial demonstrative. I'm guessing that means this or something.
Well, I could have put a note in there about that. And so that is sometimes you'll just overlook something.
One moment.
So next time it may be better to pause the recording. David just straight up muted a recording to almost sneeze, but which I appreciate, which I appreciate. Thank you.
I'm sure you do too, but I didn't.
But we should have paused as opposed to having, we just blanked out
there. I've never done a pause before, and so I was a little afraid of it, but you're probably right. We should just pause.
I too have never done a pause. He also has a problem where he has a cat in his lap and now nowhere to put his computer.
Yeah, so I'm just going to hold
But I do want to say, though, that this is sometimes, best intentions aside, you're going to forget to add a note, and that's absolutely fine. That is part of the relay process. If it's a note that ends up being vital to the translation, as a participant, you can always go back and say, hey, I saw this. I'm not quite sure what you meant by that. And if it's something that should have been clarified in the first place, you can always provide that then. So like David could text me if, or whatever, if he can't figure out what a medial demonstrative might be, but he may also just say, you know what, I think I can kind of figure that out, and we'll see what happens here and whether he asks me to clarify.
Yeah, I would just say and then just whatever. So we've got Tom, Tonya, and Anya, and so I'm gonna go back to the text. I see Tom there, and so Tom is medial demonstrative singular. That's the important thing. So now we know that it is wildflower. Tawagnitom, wildflower. And then we have Tonya, also singular. Where was, I saw that. Oh, the trees. So, okay, we still don't know about the ala, but we have rietonya. So that's tree. And so we'll have to see what the ala is, but at least we got some of that figured out. And then we have Anya for plural class 3. And then Sari Anya. Sari was snow or snowflakes. We're just going to call that snow. And so there again, it's, you know, in English, it's no big deal. Here, the snow is plural. The verb is plural. Great. All right, moving on. Common count nouns listed as CC in the dictionary. Thank you for that, because I would not have guessed that. Mm-hmm. Especially as CC usually stands for coordinating conjunction.
It's in brackets. It's in the, you know, I had a whole thing. It made sense to me, and so it's my dictionary, yes.
Yeah. Can occur in singular or plural forms, while common non-count nouns listed as CN cannot occur with singular marking. And pattern as plural forms, even if the interpretation feels more singular in nature. And there's Sadi is a CN. Hmm. Why it actually has to be marked for plural then is a question, but we see that. All right. Okay.
It's actually technically not marked for plural. It's marked for class 3 definite reading.
Oh, definite. Well, you shouldn't have given me that clue.
It was right there on the page. Sorry. I know. You're right. I shouldn't have, but I just needed to add a bit of that's why.
All right. All right. All right. Next, nominative nouns are unmarked. Cases where needed occur as prefixes, such as the locative prefix, ala. Bam. There we are. All right. And let's see. Ala rietonia in that tree. All right, well, we'll see. Adjectives follow the noun they modify and occur with agreement suffixes that are reflect number and class.
Whoops, typo.
Is it on there too?
It sure is, because I copied and pasted.
Awesome. All right, here we go.
That are, they are reflect.
Gem and jaw. Number in class. So we have Gia Gem, E Gem, Vegetlig Sadanya Jeja. Perfect. All right. All right. This is done now. So now we have to figure out what this means. Okay. What a beautiful thought. I like this. Oh, I'm sorry, Kitty. That's the heater. All right. So I think that what this is saying is that essentially in that tree, bloomed that yellow and small wildflower while the snow fell. While the white snow fell, the white snow fell. Okay, hold on. Okay, yeah, because that's going to be the subject. So, the Alerietonia is essentially it's a locative argument, the equivalent of a prepositional phrase, and it occurs directly after the verb, kind of like in an adverbial position, which pushes the subject into second position, at least in terms of the nouns. Okay, let's read. That yellow and small wildflower. You know, in English, I think we would say small yellow.
I agree with that assessment, yeah, in terms of how we would do it in English.
Yeah, I don't know how I feel about those demonstratives, but, you know, they're in there. So I'm going to stick with it. In that tree, blend that small. That's going to be my translation of the text. Now, I think then what comes next is that I translate it. Is that right?
And now David will talk through the translation into his Conlay.
All right, so often when it comes to relays, I like to either do something fun, you know, some language that I want to work with, or I just want to be lazy and not have to think about it too much. In this case, I want to be lazy. And so
what he means is he wants to be efficient. I want to take away this lazy. It's efficiency.
Right. Efficient.
We only have like 30 minutes, you know.
Right. Okay, so I am going to use High Valyrian, but the thing that worries me, of course, is I have never ever created a word for wildflower in any language that I have not created with Jesse. And the only reason that there are words for wildflower in those languages is because Jesse created them.
I'm smiling very big at David.
So, you know, being truthful, I don't know what a wildflower is. And so if I were doing this without, you know, Jesse's input, and presumably if this were actually a relay where I were following Jesse, you know, I wouldn't. Or if we were in the same relay, right? Mm-hmm. One of us wouldn't want to spoil the other. That is the first and really only difficult task that I see ahead of me. What the heck, a wildflower? It's not a thing, right? It's just a made-up term.
It's really hard right now because there are like three things that I'm like, I need to keep track of and I need to remember to say this at the end of the episode after David is finished. And this is one of them because since this is supposed to be the spirit of like a demo Conlang relay, David would be working on his own.
Yeah.
And so I will share my thoughts on what makes it a wildflower after he's finished.
Okay, so when it comes to faithfulness of the text, you know, we'd have to keep these demonstratives in there, but it just sounds hokey and Valyrian, so we're not going to do that. And so we're going to start with the subject. High Valyrian is SOV. And so we're just going to type wildflower in all capital letters and
ooh, and spell it in some fun ways.
And Small and yellow. So that would be, I'm just about to use the word in Finnish.
Peony.
Yeah, peony. What is it in, I have Larinpika. Okay, so I don't know the gender of wildflower, so we're just going to roll with lunar for right now. Bika and Kedlie. And there has to be a macron over the final vowel, and the stress shifts, and that means blank and blank. So Bika is small, Kedlie is yellow. Bika, Kedlie is small and yellow. Though I do wonder, let me pull over my High Valyrian document. Colors don't really work very the same way in High Valyrian as they do in English. Kedlie is something that captures the yellow to gold to brown spectrum. I want to look at Timpa is white, light colored gray pink. It doesn't know. You know what? It doesn't touch yellow. It doesn't touch yellow. So I better not use Timpa. That wouldn't. It's just Kedlie feels a little dark for the wildflower. And that's why I'm hesitant to use it. But you know, we'll stick with it. I think it's more important to capture the yellow than the white, especially given the contrast with the snow, which is white. And of course, we have to use the word for white there, so we couldn't use the same word twice. It wouldn't make any sense. So we'll go ahead and say bika Kedlie, wildflower in that tree. Trees we're going to count as inanimate. Oh boy,
you've got, I didn't know you had so much tone required in High Valyrian. That was some,
only if you want to pronounce it correctly,
phrase there. That was like the high super high tone.
Yeah. Okay, so I believe that tree is Guesa. So I think this is going to be Conagüesa or Conagüesa. I think. Let's take a look. Oh, it's Guese. Wait a minute. Guese. Conagüesa. Oh, that's tough. What other kind of trees are there? What kind of...
Oh, undo.
Yeah, I know. What kind of trees have wildflowers on them? I wish I knew that. Then I could use a specific word for that tree. How is a wildflower growing in a tree anyway? Oh, gosh. All right, whatever. So it's growing in that tree. You know, I'm going to change it. Especially, I don't like those double long vowels. It's long vowels because it's in the locative case. Like the first one, it's a long vowel and the stress shifts and it's like, all right. But these, they're unstressed long vowels because it's a locative case. I don't like that, so I'm going to change it. And so I'm going to look and see if I have a word for... Nope. Nothing for bloom. So, all right, we're just going to use, let's see, what is this? Ilzunagon, to cultivate, to engender, to encourage, to grow, now, to cause, to grow, now. To creak, to groan, to growl, grow in size or proportion. No, that doesn't make sense. To raise, to rear, to tend, instead of plants or children. I don't think that's right. To ripen, to mature, that's what. Oh, to sprout.
Yeah, I was going to say there's one below it.
So ubruragon, that's what it is. All right. Okay. And so I know that what's written there is the past tense, but this, should be, gosh, what is this? because that the while the snow is falling is going to be the imperfect. Yeah, I guess this should be the perfect, shouldn't it? That's the whole point of having a perfect and an imperfect. The one thing happened while the other thing was happening. Yeah. So, ubrur da. Oh, it's going to be plural, isn't it?
Boy, again with all those tones.
Ubrurtis. Yeah, now here's the fun part. You don't want to use that case. So what we're going to do is we're going to use a locative applicative. So the locative applicative starts with a U or a V. So this is actually going to end up being vubrurtis. Vubrurtis. This is a great word. Vubrurtis.
Oh, goodness. That is one where I would always have an accent in High Valyrian and people would judge me.
And then now the object of the locative applicative takes the dative or the genitive, depending on what's happening here. And so now this is going to be hueso. It's going to be the genitive because what follows is something that begins with a consonant. The difference is hueso or huesot, right? And so since there's a V following it, we just drop the T. Cono hueso.
What? Oh, is the cono the... That's the that.
That.
Okay. And I will say, like, obviously David's putting some thought into the phonoaesthetic, which we do as speakers too. Like when we're writing a sentence, we don't like the flow of something. We don't like these two sounds next to each other. You know, we do that all the time. Obviously that's not necessary. You wouldn't need to make things more complicated for yourself in a conlang relay. That is a stylistic choice. And so that is, you know, something that is not necessary, but is, you know, your choice.
Yeah, now we're going to get even more complicated. I don't remember the name of this thing. Instrumental absolute. Background or setup information may be given with a noun in the instrumental. Combined with a participle, this can form a kind of small clause that can express a complete idea without making use of a full sentence. Some examples are given below. Things like, in anger we fought. With the figs eaten, we cried. And so on. And so that is actually, I think, what we're going to do with this. In other words, with the white snow falling, a small wildfowl flower bloomed in that tree. That's really the way that this sentence should be. All right, so now things are getting really tough. Okay, so sona. And of course, this should be collective. Sonar. Sonar. Snow. Snow. And snow. Yes, good count. White. Timpar. Timpa. Timpa. Because, of course, the...
That was the one you didn't... Yeah.
Timpa. Sonar. Timpa sonar.
Is it Tipa or Timpa?
Timpa. And this is all going to change anyway, but it's the white snow. When you have a noun in the collective in High Valyrian, the singular form of the adjective is what modifies it. So Timpa sonar, but this, of course, is going to have to be in the instrumental. Instrumental. So I don't remember how the instrumental of the collective works, but... That's what our tables are for. Boy, this is one sentence, but this would be a heck of a sentence for anybody to translate. So, arza, that's right. And so, sonarza, that's it. Sonarza, timpas, timposa? Let's try that.
By the way, I feel for a relay, it would be highly irresponsible for David to be like, here's all the documentation, figure it out. Especially for a language like High Valyrian, where he's got literally hundreds of pages.
Got a wiki, just figure it out.
And that would be so much overload on information when you're just trying to get through a text in a short amount of time. It's different if you have, you know... a month or like there's no timeline and you're really just playing around and wanting to explore, then all the documentation, great, because that gives you more to like look for patterns beyond what you're looking for. But in something like a relay, the goal is get through the text, figure out what you think it says, and then move on.
Yeah. So, okay, so then ropagon is how you say to fall, but that's how you say it when it's a person. When it's something inanimate like snow, you have to put that into the instrumental passive, and so it becomes yopagon. All right, and then that thing is going to become a participle. There is not an imperfect participle. So now things get a little difficult. Wow. There's no imperfect participle.
That is very interesting.
And that's definitely done on purpose. There isn't supposed to be an imperfect participle. But that's usually not relevant. It's only for this extremely rare circumstance where you can't have a finite verb since you're using the instrumental absolute. So in this case, we're going to change this to the imperfect, which I think will make it a little easier to say. Vubrorilza, I think.
Not sure that's any easier than the other one. It's the brur part. Oh. And the vubrur.
Yeah, vubroriles.
Vubrur.
Vubroriles. That's what it's going to be.
Oh, it takes out the brur?
Yeah, so vubroriles.
Vubruriles.
Okay, so then the wild flowers are growing. Tiempos son arza. And now we can do the present participle, which is jopare, right? Because it's, jopare. And now we need to put that into the instrumental singular as well. So let's figure out how to do that. Solar, lunar, jobarose. There we go. Okay. Okay, now this back to the wildflower. A word for daisy? No. Daffodil? Is that a wildflower? Got a regular old flower? Elderflower? Oh. Jasmine? I got roses, violets. What did Lice come from? Lice means pretty cute, fair. I just feel like that somehow will work. Because we don't have. You know what? I think I'm just gonna give up. I'm just gonna use a rucla flower. It's going to not necessarily be the same thing, and it's small. It's just one. So, bukon. This is going to become kedlior. Ruklon kono hueso ubruriles. Okay. Tempos sonarza ya. Oh wait, sorry. Tempos sonarza yo parose. Bicon pedlior ruclon cono hueso vubruriles. And that is the white snows falling, with the white snows falling,
a small yellow flower bloomed in that tree. Yeah.
Nice. All right. So as a side note, of course, you heard David say what his, you know, text meant. If this were an actual Conlang relay, you would obviously have no access to that information or to any of his thought processes, obviously, because it's like you don't see that as a participant. As a participant, you only see the document where it says, here's what the text is in my language, and here are grammar notes and glossary to get you through. And so then it's, you know, up to you to decide what you think that next stage of the text means. Okay, so I've been holding things in. So interesting, because again, to the point where David said, you don't have to try to make it tricky, things are just going to happen. Mm-hmm. And it's not because, sometimes it's because of an honest mistake. Sometimes it's because one person thinks that is, you know, like not something I need to point out. And the next person says, yeah, you do. And so, you know, it's just like a difference of, this is all about the humanity of the thing. It's all about, we have our own ways of thinking and doing things. So I'm going to go back a few. Okay, so the whole the thing. Going where it's like, the, you know, there's a definite. And one thing that David had said was like, what is it with all these that's? In my head, this was a scenario where two speakers are talking and one speaker points. There's a three-way split in demonstratives. Mm-hmm. So here, kind of there where we can still see it, and then a distal one where it's like we can't see what it is we're talking about. And so like in my head, it's like one speaker was pointing to another speaker and saying, oh, look, there's that wildflower. And so it's there, but because it's already marked as the distal, then it made sense that the tree, which was also relative to the wildflower, would also be marked for that, just because it's like, I'm going to kind of almost like agreement, because it's like we're talking about the same distance. They're near each other. So there it is. I will also say that it was interesting to hear you work through. Not once did you think through that a locative could be more generic than in, that it could be like near, at, on, in. And so it's not in the tree that I had originally written the sentence. It was just like by the tree, like in the vicinity of the tree, like there in that tree's area. So like that could be in the shade of the tree. It could be like, so it's just like sense. It's in the tree space where you would understand that. And like, I do have ways to make it more specific, but like for the way that this language is used, you'd really only need to make it more specific if it was confusing. Now to me, a wildflower, and for this language also, a wildflower is a very small weed-like flower that grows in the ground. And so it wouldn't be in the tree or on the tree.
That's what
it would have to
wondering.
Be like near the tree, because it's on the ground growing and it's in the tree space. And
a,
so
now it's a flower growing out of a tree.
And now it's growing out of a tree, according to David. And so that was just something that happened in the translation process where it's like, that was just an honest, like, here's how I saw it. And also another way that in languages where I distinguish a wildflower from other kinds of flowers, usually what that indicates is for my speakers, they have developed ways of growing flowers purposely. And so a flower that you grow ends up being called something else. A wildflower is something that just pops up in your yard. Mm. And like, you're not trying to plant it. You're not trying to grow it. It's there. And so anyway, so that's wildflower. Okay. Also what was interesting was like, and I know this about David, he doesn't always read all the notes, but like I included notes in the glossary. One, I don't think you specifically mentioned to fall, to blow as being a definition of cleam. You mentioned it, but like, I don't think you mentioned why. And that's because it's a generic weather verb. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, you know, snow falling. So like he went with fell, which was absolutely what I had intended. So that's fine. But then the white snow, there was a note with white and it said, when used with weather implies it's the first weather event associated with the season. Mm. And so it's the first snow. And that's why it was a definite. Because it was not just snow was falling, because if it were any snow, it wouldn't be marked for definite. But it was because the interpretation was like pointing out like the surprise factor of that flowers blooming and the first snow of the season is falling. Mm. And so that was the sort of surprisal factor for the speaker pointing this out. Mm. And so that was that.
I didn't get that.
And that's fine. That's part of the relay fun. Because now moving forward, unless your language happens to have some sort of overlap between white and fresh or new snow or whatever, like you wouldn't have that. As a side note, mm-hmm. the same adjective, if you use it to describe a person, that's your way of saying they're naive. They're new, they're fresh. They're not knowing things. So anyway, so that shows some like kind of fun little things that happened along the way with the translation journey. And David's absolutely right. Like this one short, tiny sentence is a heck of a challenge for anyone who would get it next. And so it's like things are going to get challenging just because it's language. And I think this is a great example. I'm so curious to know what my brain would do with this sentence from David if I got it.
Yeah.
Out of, you know, without knowing, obviously. This is fun.
And this is a random thing. So first of all, you see that I made, I think, two mistakes that potentially could lead to changes. And it's not like they're huge, but that's part of the fun. It's tiny little mistakes. Mm-hmm. Every so often a huge whopper of a mistake comes in, but you know,
and then it's hilarious.
Yeah. But like more often than not, it's like, you know, this person made, you know, two tiny little mistakes here. And then those mistakes got perpetuated. Mm-hmm. Then somebody else made two tiny little mm-hmm. mistakes somewhere else. And pretty soon, you know, you're in a completely different place. So there is that. And two, sometimes mistakes occur just because indeed the grammar is so complex. And the thing is with this sentence, it was just the way that it was shaping up. It's kind of like in English, you will hear, you know, hopefully it's antiquated at this point, but writing instructors saying things like, oh, don't use the passive voice. And it's like, well, there's reasons that we use the mm-hmm. passive voice. There's reasons that we do it in discourse. Passives, of course, are more complex than non-passives. But we do it. Why do we do it? Because sometimes discourse calls for it. Sometimes it just feels better that way. Mm-hmm. Sometimes it makes more sense to say things like that. And so in this case with High Valyrian, you have these contrasting ideas, right, in this sentence. This thing is happening and then this thing is happening. And somehow these things are related, right? And then just like by the time I got to the end of it, because like it'd be one thing if you were just saying it, but since I was translating it, by the time I got to the end of it, I was like, this is how it should be done. And it happens to use this kind of rare complex construction that uses morphological processes intended for something else, right? Instrumentals. And so anytime that happens, it's like I could try my best to explain it, to explain what the instrumental absolute is. But any conlanger is going to know what an instrumental is. And they're going to look at this and are going to say like, okay, with the snow, then mm-hmm. it's like they're doing what with the snow? Right. They're growing it with the snow? You know, there's a possibility. Right. So that's one thing where it's just a bit of grammatical complexity that depends crucially on A, my explaining it well, mm-hmm. and B, the conlanger understanding it. And then the other bit is the locative applicative, which is, I don't know how familiar you will be with this, and especially if you're a Finnish speaker, this will just sound foreign to you. But composers of Latin, especially like texts, would often try to change constructions up so that it wasn't matching endings for words in a row. They kind of like didn't like it, where, I don't know, it'd be like, you know, fortai, rosai, that type of thing. Even though that's the whole point of agreement, right? They didn't like it. So they tried to mix things up, move word order around or change the cases of things or use different words that had slightly different endings. when they were agreeing so that they didn't have rhyming. In Valyrian, it's like you can use the cases there. The locative is right there for you, which, by the way, would have the same generic meaning. So somebody very, even though I interpreted it wrong as the flower being in the tree, somebody may have taken the Valyrian grammar and then interpret it correctly.
Right, yeah.
Being like near the tree because it would mean the same thing. But the idea is that I heard it and I heard the way it was going and it was breaking up the rhythm of the sentence. And it was like, it would be so much more natural to turn this verb into a locative applicative instead. Because that's a very natural thing for a Valyrian speaker to do. The cases become simpler, the words become simpler, the words become shorter, the rhythm is more predictable, and all you have to do is just change the verb slightly. But that is kind of a grammatical complexity, mm-hmm. which suddenly, if you introduce that, that might lead to a change later on from either me not explaining it well or a conlanger misinterpreting it based on their understanding.
Right, yeah. And a few other things I did want to point out with like what I feel are best practices of providing information to the next participant. There were areas where I could have made it more difficult on David or on whoever was, you know, the participant, especially like in the glossary, because, for instance, I could have tried to present like, oh, this is a compound word. So tawagni is actually a compound word, but it's an old compound that was formed before the sound changes for this daughter language, which means that it went through a lot of sound changes that the two component parts of this compound went through differently because the stress was different in the compound versus the two words separately. So tawa would have been easy to recognize because tawa is still tawa. And when you have the first word on its own without the second part, but the gni part, so tawagni, that part on its own would be kvuoni. And like, you wouldn't recognize that. And so if I had defined tawa and kvuoni, you wouldn't have seen it in the text. And like, you wouldn't have necessarily put the two together. And so if you're going to have a compound and you've got to decide, should I present this as one word in the glossary or should I present it in its component parts? Like, really think through, one, could they recognize it based on the phonological changes? And two, does it mean something new when you put the pieces together that like no one would guess except someone who's already familiar with the language? And if that's the case, then definitely present it as a compound in the glossary rather than trying to like send them on a rabbit hunt. There's also, like, for instance, the conjunction when. Yabiji is actually quite complex because it comes from an old phrase. Putting that in the dictionary as, like, the whole phrase would not have helped the process at all. And so it's like, I just give you what it is now, even though, again, the history, it's a lot more complex than what you see in that entry. But anyway, so that's just, like, a best practices thing. Just really be mindful of, would someone looking at this be able to find what they need out of the glossary? And once they do, am I giving them enough support to at least like get in the ballpark of what was intended? Mm-hmm. And so those were just a few things to point out. All right. So that leads us to the December challenge. Because a few things. One, people had said, oh, we're out of challenges because we just recently did a couple challenges back to back. And I don't know about you all, but we find them delightful. And at least two of you out there do as well. And so we have a challenge for the month. This month, we are mentally and spiritually and all the illy ways gearing up for the what I think is being called Let's Have a Relay for the new year. And so it's an LTS Chlab collaboration where it's really, really it's Chlab and then we're just joining in.
I'm saying it's a collaboration.
I already made that joke in the last stream, but yes, it is. Indeed. David
wanted to make it again.
David likes that joke. I had to point out I made it first. I just want to make sure. Right. Because it's a corny joke, and I like my corny jokes to be attributed to me. All right. But anyway, so it's Let's Have a Booba putting on the relay, and enough people are interested that we're fairly certain we're going to be able to have two rings of the relay. And so that's where the LTS half is going to come in, because I'll get to kick off since I've already seen the text. I can't participate, but I could be the starter text for a second ring. So anyway, in that spirit, for knowing that we have a relay coming up this month in December, I am running a super informal, super mini relay that's going to run throughout the month as we have participants who are signing up and willing to participate. And so what this means is you need to get in touch with me if you want to participate just as soon as possible. Let me know roughly when you're available. It is, when I say mini relay, it will be longer than one sentence like David had, but it's going to be like two sentences. You know, like maybe three if they're short sentences, but it's really going to be a super mini relay. It's meant to be a fun little challenge for anyone who is just looking for like a fun thing to do in December that may just take like, you know, an evening to do. Like it's not even, it really shouldn't take most people 48 hours at all with a leg. It's meant to be something you could do in an evening if you're prepared and ready for it. But it's also hopefully going to be an introduction for some of you to the relay process, where like if you've been a little nervous about participating in a relay, I hope you'll participate in this. And you can get 48 hours. So it's not like I'm going to cut you off. Like if you need the time because you need to develop features in your language maybe, or maybe you realized, you know, you just need some more time with translation or whatever, this is meant to be informal. It's meant to be fun. It's just meant to be a have a challenge or have an introduction so that way you can see what this relay business is all about. But you do need to get in touch with me. David, whether he realizes it or not, is going to be a participant in the relay, and I will put him wherever I need him in the relay to do it. And I know a few of you out there have expressed interest in having a December challenge. So like, I'm pretty sure I'm going to have at least 3 to 5 people. But again, it's just meant to be like, let's have some fun, do a little challenge and we'll pass it. So I will be relay master. I will actually, for some of you, I may have you actually send me the materials and then I'll send it to the next person, because I may not know who's going to be next, because we may get participants signing up and like I may have thought the text was done but then end up sending it to another person. So it's going to be super informal. This is just again meant to be some fun. And that means our next podcast episode, which will release on January 1st, we're going to be breaking down the results and we're going to have some special guests with us on air, not with us in person, but on the podcast episode as we break it down. This also, by the way, if you're nervous about like a relay where you're expected to read your language's results, this one you won't, because the results are all going to be given in a podcast episode, which means it's going to be me, David, or one of our special guests reading the text aloud, not you. And so you're not on the spot at all. You just get to sit back and enjoy and see what happened with the relay text. And that is that. So hopefully that got you excited. We hope that you enjoyed the process. We will, of course, have some PDF goodies attached to the Patreon post for this so that you can dig through and see the translation. We'll maybe mark it a little bit more clearly in the text, David's translation versus the original text. But there's also a clean copy of the PDF that will go up. And so that will all be available for you. And yeah, in the meantime, we hope you all stay grammar and we look forward to seeing what happens with our little relay here.
Bye, everybody.
Bye.